This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk.
On-demand audio.
We are going to balance this budget, and we are going to pay off the debt under President Trump.
Capital Beat.
All right, we've got Congressman Eric Burleson on the phone with us this morning, and great to have him back. That was Howard Lutnick talking, the Commerce Secretary, about trying to pay down debt. To do that, you got to have a budget, and you guys have been working on that, Eric. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, it's not been easy, I can tell you that.
No, I'll bet not. You know, I was watching the mainstream media meltdown over it. The Republicans barely passed a budget. Well, guess what? If it's a party line vote, it's always going to be barely when you can only afford to lose one or two votes, right?
That's right. And so, to me, this was kudos to Mike Johnson and to leadership for being able to wrangle this. They had to deal with fiscal hawks like me who want to balance the budget and cut as much spending as possible, because we believe all of the problems that we're facing, whether it's inflation and then not being able to, be able to be strong when it comes to these national security issues,
right,
all stem from our debt and the deficits that we're facing. So we just got to get it under control.
I know you said that you were able to get, six or seven times the cuts that they originally were talking about by the time the negotiation was over?
Yeah, that's right. So a lot of the fiscal hawks, Freedom Caucus, we joined with members, a lot of them on the budget committee, who were very fiscally conservative. And we started strategizing all the way back in November after the election. We were strategizing what this reconciliation package should look like. We were a little bit more aggressive in our original aspirations. But then when we got to the beginning of the year, when leadership proposed its baseline of how much it's going to cut in spending, it was very anemic. They were going to cut $300 billion over a 10-year period. Now, that is, think about that. That's about $30 billion in cuts out of a $7 trillion spent.
Wow.
Okay? Right. And you can see why I laughed at that proposal. Yeah. And we all laughed at that. So what we got was to bump that up by seven to at least, at the minimum, the floor has to be a $2 trillion cut over the next 10 years. That's at least $200 billion out of the $7 trillion. Now, that is not enough, as much as I would like, but I feel like that's as far as we could stretch the moderates in our conference to go at this time.
We have to talk about the Epstein files. It was a whole lot of nothing yesterday. Pam Bondi kind of talked it up, saying it was going to reveal all this information, and so we're all kind of waiting with bated breath. Nothing. Nothing that we didn't already know. Now she's upset, you know, demanding an investigation from Kash Patel into why this information was not given to her. Do you think that's ever actually going to happen? Are we finally going to see all these names of the people who took those flights?
I think I don't know whether they're going to be able to get the information or not. I'm trying to withhold criticism, but let me. I think if she had hindsight into this, she wouldn't have said before she took office that she has the files sitting on her desk. And because she until she found out that, oh, the files on my desk are not really anything.
Right. We thought, so, yeah. Yeah.
And so she kind of got everybody's anticipation up. But now she knows she's got more places to look to try to get that information. I hope that she's able to do it. She also kind of fumbled the release of this. I'm on the disclosure task force. We are working with the White House to try to coordinate. We're a team that's supposed to be part of this. We're supposed to be read in. We have security clearances to read these documents. And so that did not happen. So there's been a lot of communication back and forth to how that failed. And so I think that going forward, we're going to be more aggressive in trying to be helpful in getting the right documents and getting them released.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you want to believe that they're going to do that. You guys have got a lot on your hands, a lot that's going on all over the place. You know, one thing I wanted to mention was this bill ending the cycle of dependency act. You know, people have tried this before to get welfare to work and all this stuff going on. What's different about this effort?
Yeah, so this is a bill that I'm sponsoring, and I wanted your listeners to understand so they can refute what the left is going to say about this topic. You remember in the 90s when Bill Clinton and Al Gore, they famously were cutting, you know, government spending, and they reached across the aisle with Republicans, and they worked out a deal where they instituted work requirements into the TANF program, food stamp program, Medicaid, all of them.
Yes.
Into all of the welfare programs, they said, we're going to take care of the people who really need it. We're going to take care of people if they're disabled, if they're blind. If you're a senior citizen, you can't afford your nursing home care, we're going to take care of you. We're going to take care of children who are in poverty and their mothers, right? But then what they said is, but you know who really should be actually, instead of collecting a check from the government, should be out there producing are the people who are able-bodied, working-aged adults. And so they said, they instituted work requirements saying, if you're going to get money from the federal government, if you're going to get aid, you need to at least be working a job, or you need to be trying to find a job, or you need to be going to school to get a job. Just check any of those boxes, and we'll continue to support your welfare. And if you're not, then we're not going to continue to enable you to be unproductive. I think that that's common sense.
I agree. That makes complete sense to me. And I think what was so frustrating, especially during the COVID era, was people were receiving a lot of benefits. And I don't know if that would have, I guess, been unemployment, but it was almost as if they needed to show that they were trying to find a job. So I would hear from people who own businesses who would say, we'd have so many people applying for these jobs. We'd want them to come in for an interview. They would just no-show us, or maybe they would get the job and then they would show up for a day and not ever come back. And so that's what I also want reined in is actually, you know, having a job and holding it versus being like, oh, I'm looking. See, I went on 15 interviews in the last month.
Yeah, Kim, I love that. I really appreciate that input. That's something that I've heard myself, and I need to add that to this bill to make it better. So I appreciate that. And yeah, you're right. Like this bill does is it reinstitutes the Clinton era work requirements. And the reason why they have to be reinstituted is because Obama waived many of these work requirement rules and then expanded the program, expanded Medicaid. And then Joe Biden did the same thing. Joe Biden put in 13 executive orders to basically eliminate work requirement rules and then also expanded the population to the point where today it is the biggest population. They are eclipsing all of the people who are disabled, all of the children, all the pregnant mothers, all the people in nursing homes. There's more people who are young and working age who are on these programs than the people who actually need it. And they are bankrupting the United States government. We're spending $618 billion a year on this program. It's growing. It's estimated to reach $1 trillion. And so enough is enough. We need to return to fiscal sanity, pre-COVID era spending.
Amen. Congressman Eric Burleson with us. You know, I'd point out that it was Obamacare that expanded Medicaid, and it's just exploded, and it's unsustainable. I don't know who could look at that program and think that it could keep growing at that rate with the kind of debt this country carries.
That's right. That's why one of the solutions I am on board with that I would absolutely support is that we block grant the money to the states. I think we should do that with Medicaid. I think we should do it with Medicare, with not Medicare, but we should do that with education. We need to block grant this money, write one check to the state and say, you are smart enough to do a better job than we are. You can take this money and probably build a better healthcare system for your participants than the federal government can. And I think that the states will do that, but it will also stop the growth in this program, because right now the states are incentivized to get more people on the program, because the more people, the bigger the check the federal government has to write.
Amen.
And so that will stop that.
Well, thanks for doing all the hard work up there, Congressman. We appreciate the update on it, and keep us informed.
Absolutely. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. We'll talk to you soon. Congressman Eric Burleson there from the 7th Congressional District here in Missouri. Trying to get somebody on every Friday for this segment, the Capitol Beat, and keep you updated on efforts up there to kind of change government. That's the only way you can look at it. They're trying to reform something that's never really been reformed. Clinton era paid lip service to it, but everything got reversed just a few short years later.
Mm-hmm.
And it might again, but you need to put some permanent change. Not just empty out some of those federal buildings that aren't being used, sell them so they can't fill them back up.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Get more at 971talk.com.